Prabhupada. Good morning to those of you who are in North America and to whom I am in particular speaking. So this can be part of your morning sadhana. I see some of you there, although seems like low attendance today. Not sure why. Well, I can speculate. But still, I'm going to do things a little bit differently today. This morning when I was doing my back exercises, my audio player ran out of batteries right in the very beginning, so I didn't get to listen to a lecture. It's rechargeable, but it just needs to be charged. And it's in the process of recharging now. So I have nothing to share from a lecture today. So I thought I would fulfill one of the objectives that I wanted to accomplish by requesting devotees to share their realizations. Take advantage of the English medium, which I actually appreciate every other day. Not that I don't appreciate speaking in the other forum, but it gives me the opportunity to speak without having to stop every 30 seconds. And it's actually been refreshing to have that opportunity. And that's why I've tried to appeal to the devotees in North America to please continue to participate, to give me this facility to speak English. Because as I said, why am I doing this if nobody understands what I'm saying? Oh, that's okay. It should be enough. I forgot to delete. So I was thinking to read. I picked some of the realizations devotees shared. If you remember, there was three categories of realizations. The first is I requested devotees to share a realization that they got from someone they heard online, whoever that may have been. The second was to share a realization of something they've read in Srila Prabhupada's books that gave evidence as to the cause or provides a solution to the current world situation. And I was looking specifically something from Prabhupada's books or from something they may have heard in a lecture or any source from Srila Prabhupada. And the third is that to their own realization, to speak their own realization from whatever source that they wish to share. And as I said, I have well over, I don't know, I lost count, well over 100 and that have been submitted. And it's about half and half. Half are in English, half are in Russian. And it takes me a lot longer to read the Russian. So I'm going to not read out loud. I can't even read it out loud, but to read it in front of me. And therefore, I extracted something from English for today. And some of them I wanted to read. Before I read them, though, I was thinking of something good to introduce it. That I was thinking that the Srila Prabhupada, oftentimes, I heard so many different stories, although I never witnessed it when I saw Prabhupada. Every time I was either with or saw Prabhupada, he always gave class. And that was only in a few places. That was Philadelphia, New York, and Mayapur. But I knew that devotees shared a lot of stories of how Prabhupada would like to hear his disciples speak, and how he would, in many respects, relish hearing their realizations and at times even provoking them to speak and frightening them and surprising them.
Yeah.
What was that? I have somebody speaking. Not everybody's muted? Uh-huh. So this isn't exactly the same medium. I'm not going to read the names of the persons who shared their realizations, for one thing. They're not speaking. I'm speaking. but I'm just speaking their realizations. Nonetheless, the principle is that there's something to be heard, hopefully. And Prabhupada had a reason for doing that. He wanted devotees to share their realizations publicly, because that was part of his training, to try to induce his disciples to take responsibility for the future. And as I spoke 2 days ago, in the end of my presentation, Prabhupada was definitely always thinking about the future, and made many statements to that effect in the 70s of how he was preparing his followers in all respects for the future. And also he made it clear, not only was he preparing his followers for the future, but preparing them, giving preparations for many generations to come in the form of his teachings, his books, his lectures, his movement. So in that light, I was going to read one little story from Satsarup Maharaj. I have several of them here. I could read them, but this one was particularly attractive because it really captured my mood. He said that one night during one of Prabhupada's visits to Boston, when we were still in the storefront in Alston, he asked me to speak in front of the group who had come to hear him. Prabhupada would sometimes ask several disciples to lecture during the same evening. He did it to train us up, and I thought that he also liked to sit back and let the disciples do some of the work. I related to that. He liked to speak himself, but when we spoke, he seemed to listen, and at the same time, he withdrew himself. I stood up so that Swamiji and I were both facing in the same direction towards the audience. He was on the dais, and I was standing by his side. I began preaching the same philosophy, which is all I knew. You're not this body. Chant Hare Krishna. But then I thought of what I'd been hearing on the Krishna book tapes. So I started telling the story of Krishna stealing the butter. Krishna would steal the butter and distribute it to the monkeys. And when the monkeys had eaten to their satisfaction and wouldn't take any more, then Krishna said, "Your butter is useless. Even the monkeys won't eat it." As I was telling this pastime, the audience was attentive and some were smiling. But when I said that Krishna said the butter was useless, something changed in the audience. Suddenly, they were all charmed, and I knew what it was. They weren't looking at me, they were looking at Prabhupada. They started to laugh and go, "Ooh, ah." I looked over at Prabhupada, and he had a big smile on his face. He was delighted by hearing about Krishna, even when I told it, and it had sent him into the ecstasy of Krishna's pastimes. So I thought that was a little nice to introduce today's session. We won't speak for long, although it's already been 15 minutes. Time goes fast. So I'm going to read some of the realizations that I read from English. This one is something that the devotee heard from Prabhupada and shared it. Devotee said, Srila Prabhupada, is it possible for the Krishna consciousness movement to change the nature of the Kali Yuga? Prabhupada, certainly, certainly. Just like if there is epidemic disease and you get vaccinated, then there is no disease for you. Similarly, the Kali Yuga may be with so many defects, but if you remain Krishna conscious, these defects will not touch you because you become transcendental. That is described in the Bhagavad Gita. Mamcha yo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Anyone who is engaged in the service of the Lord, he is transcendental to all these material laws. He is not material. Just like this child, he does not know what is Krishna consciousness, but he is also dancing because he is already on the transcendental platform. Not that he is a child. He has to grow into an old man like me, then he will, not that he is a child. He has to grow an old man like me, then he will dance. No, immediately. So Krishna consciousness is so perfect that immediately you become on the transcendental platform. You are not contaminated by these material laws. I'm not going to comment. If I do, I'll do the same thing I've done in the past and I'll end up not reading anything. This is a number one realization. That's it. Number one realization is something they heard. This devotee is saying, there is so much wonderful nectar in the online association given to us by the exalted Vaishnavas from far away and from our local devotees here in, it's Ottawa. But so far, the following realization was the one that really churns hearts. Oh, a lecture given on April 21st, 2020, Entering Krishna's Eternal Family. I guess this is a quote from me. It is said that devotees come from Achyuta Gotra, or Krishna's family, as opposed to the material lineage because they see this world as full of ingredients for the Lord's service. How to see this world as full of ingredients for Krishna's service? We should treat all women as Krishna's beloveds and to be enjoyed only by him. Treat our father and mother as Krishna's father and mother. Instead of considering our children as our servants, we should treat them as childhood friends of Krishna. Then we will not see the material world everywhere, but instead we will see Goloka. And Krishna, being the head of that family, personally takes the burden of caring for the pure devotees in the same manner as a householder takes care of his wife and children. Because Krishna's devotees have no karma due to a lack of desire, their happiness is given by Krishna alone. I see, this is a paraphrase of what I had said. It should also not be understood that Krishna is bearing this burden as a duty like he does with the creation of the universe. Instead, Krishna says, Rather, being attached to my devotees, I take the greatest pleasure taking care of their needs, like carrying the weight of one's lover. Okay. This is a number two realization. Number two realization is something from they read from Prabhupada. I was recently reading about the appearance of Lord Varaha in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It all felt very connected to the current state of affairs in terms of the Lord's pastimes with the earth planet being unfathomable. Unfathomable. Here is one purport which stuck out to me in connection to Krishna's inconceivable potency in sustaining the earth as he decides to or not. I saw this as more broadly connected to the current state of both the earth and its inhabitants' sustenance. I believe that part of the solution in dealing with this pandemic is to inwardly begin to accept that the Lord acts as he sees fit. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam 3.13.46. Translation. The sage Maitreya said, "The Lord being thus worshipped by all the great sages and transcendentalists, touched the earth with his hoofs and placed it on the water." Purport. The earth was placed on the water by his inconceivable potency. The Lord is all-powerful, and therefore he can sustain the huge planets either on the water or in the air as he likes. The tiny human brain cannot conceive how these potencies of the Lord can act. Man can give some vague explanation of the laws by which such phenomena are made possible, but actually the tiny human brain is unable to conceive of the activities of the Lord, which are therefore called inconceivable. Yet the frog philosophers still try to give some imaginary explanation. This is also a number two, but with a little bit more elaboration from the author. Oh, maybe it's not. Excuse me. Yes, some elaboration. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 5, Maitreya Rishi describes to Vidura the process of the creation of this material world, of how the sound is created from the false ego, the sky is created from sound, sky mixed with eternal time and external energy created, the touch sensation from which the air was produced, etc. In a purport to verse 36, Srila Prabhupada writes, quote, "From the descriptions of the physical elements in the above verses, it is clear that in all stages, the glance of the Supreme is needed with the other additions and alterations. In every transformation, the last finishing touch is the glance of the Lord, who acts as a painter does when he mixes different colors to transform them into a particular color. Although they are different mixtures of different materials, such mixtures do not take place automatically, just as a mixture of colors does not take place automatically without the touch of the living painter. The automatic system is factually activated by the glancing touch of the Lord. Living consciousness is the final word in all physical changes. This fact is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita as follows." I like that. Living consciousness is the final word in all physical changes. It's very clear what Prabhupada is saying. That living consciousness is Krishna. Prabhupada used to say that, you know, we have our desires, Krishna has his desires, but Krishna's independent and final. So in the same way, it's being said here, living consciousness is the final world in all physical changes. Fact is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, Maya Dakshina Prakriti, Suyate Sacharacharam, Hetunani Nokantiya Jagad Viparivartate. The conclusion is that the physical elements may work very wonderful, wonderfully to the layman's eyes, but their workings actually take place under the supervision of the Lord. Those who can mark only the changes of the physical elements and cannot perceive the hidden hands of the Lord behind them are certainly less intelligent persons, although they may be advertised as great material scientists. And then the devotee goes on to share a realization. I was thinking how Krishna is all-powerful, and if he wants, he can create anything or change anything just by his thought. The global materialistic money-making machine was almost completely suspended in few weeks, if not days. Transportation stopped. Big profitable shopping centers and restaurants were all closed. Factories don't work. Nobody would imagine this can happen. I suspect even politicians don't understand what's going on now and how it all could have happened. I'm sure this could have been done only by the sweet will of Krishna, or as Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, in all stages the glance of the Supreme Lord is needed. That was the realization they shared. In a sense, yes, but we understand that by the supreme sanction of Krishna. Everything is sanctioned by Krishna. And as Prabhupada said, not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord. And that means that Krishna gives his sanction for it. Whether or not he's directly intervening in directly in punishing materialists, we know that that's not direct intervention. It's through the agency, as Prabhupada brought out in the purport, through his material energy. Maya Dakshina Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam. It is his material energy. And is acting with the sanction of the Lord. So sometimes people think they have this conception of God, of an old man who sits on the throne and throws thunderbolts. That's not Krishna. It's simply sitting on the throne, throwing thunderbolts to all the people who are misbehaving. You know, he already has that arrangement all going on perfectly according to his will. He takes much greater pleasure reciprocating with those who are fully dependent upon him. And in that respect, that's where he is most personally present for those who love him. Otherwise, he is present, but as the supreme sanctioner, giving permission and as the witness. Anumanta, and how come I can't remember the other verse? Huh? Upadrashta, yes. Upadrashta and Anumanta. So, actually, there's one other Prabhupada story. I'm going back again. It relates to what just happened now. It was from Dayananda Prabhu. He said, one night as I was driving Swamiji to the temple, he asked me to speak. I immediately thought I would rather not, although in Swamiji's absence, his other disciples had given talks. I had never given even an informal talk. So I told Swamiji, I preferred to hear him speak, but he said he preferred to hear me. So it was settled. At the temple, we had kirtan as usual, and then I began to speak. I was speaking on the validity of God, trying to prove that God's existence was logical and scientifically reasonable. Such a talk should have been given with reference to the Vedic literature, but my fund of knowledge was not embellished by verses from the scriptures, nor was it even adequately based on basic Krishna conscious philosophy. I was aware that my talk wasn't adequate, a fact that Prabhupada himself brought home in the sweetest possible way. I'm not saying that applies here. The last part is a little bit applicable. When at one point I made a mistake and said the wrong thing altogether, Prabhupada matter-of-factly interrupted, explaining the point that I had misstated. He then motioned me to go on. I continued without any loss of face. I was being corrected in public, but without the embarrassment that a chastisement might cause. Swamiji's correction was always based on love and sincerity in relation to the goal rather than to the ego. Nice realization, Dayananda Prabhu shared. Now, actually, there was nothing philosophically wrong with what I read from the previous. It was just wasn't elaborated on enough so that a wrong impression could be taken that Krishna was personally doing all this, you know, all this punishing personally, like that was his leela. It's not his leela. That all goes on through his, as we said, through his agency of the material nature, which acts according to his sanction and according to his direction. So I don't have time to, I'm going to read one more, share one more. Then we'll get to our japa. This is the number one realization. A number one realization is the realization shared by some speaker that the devotee heard and he wanted to share with others. Many devotees have offered so much encouragement and guidance. The one devotee who sticks out besides your holiness is His Grace Vaisheshika Prabhu. I always appreciate both his depth of realization and practicality, especially during these times when there is, seems to be so much speculation and mental agitation. Vaisheshika Prabhu really offers a calm, clear, and encouraging message to the devotees. Of course, not only is it a challenge to stay sane during this pandemic, it's just as much a challenge to stay sane in this material world, what to speak of Kali Yuga. Here are some of the pearls of wisdom that I have come to appreciate and will hopefully apply. These are just pearls, little quotes that were extracted from Vaisheshika Prabhu's either talk or talks, plural, I'm not sure which. Quote, it really helps to see each day as a self-contained unit, stay in the moment, and stay in the day. Another one. While we have to physically isolate, it's important not to be emotionally isolated and to find association with other devotees. So find your community online, participate, and feel part of it. Another one. The right question is, what is the lesson in this? And if you keep asking that question, quote, what is the lesson? What is the lesson? What is the lesson? No matter how things are changing in your life, it will give you a higher perspective immediately. Another one. This is very much Vaisheshika Prabhu. I remember visiting him in his home in Northern California some years back. And we were talking, and I can't remember what the topic was about. I think the topic was about, it was before he started accepting disciples. or was about to start saving disciples or something like that. So it must have been quite some time ago. And he started to ask me all kinds of questions. And this is when I first time I heard one of his favorite statements that he oftentimes quotes. I've heard him quote it in class, or say it in class. I don't know if it's a quote. It's his own. He says something to the effect, "I live to be corrected." And in other words, he was really opening it up and saying, "Maharaj, don't hold back. Whatever you want to tell me, say it. I live to be corrected." And I really appreciated his mood, that there was no false ego there at all. He just wanted to hear and be instructed, even though he was far more. In fact, I think that might have been the same visit he took me to see. It could have been the same visit. He took me to see my godbrother, Pushtakrishna, recently departed Vaishnava, who was an orthopedic surgeon. And we went up to his office north of San Francisco, and because Pushtakrishna was offered to study, to examine the x-rays of my knees and to recommend either therapy or surgery, whichever he felt was required at the time. But that isn't what I'm going to talk about. What I'm going to talk about is when we went there, Pushtakrishna, we spent the first half hour, Pushtakrishna just asking Vaisheshika to share Shastra quotes. And Vaisheshika Prabhu was just like, from memory, he was giving so many quotes and so many realizations for about 20, 30 minutes. And Pushtakrishna was just in complete ecstasy, saying, "This sadhu, this saint, just see how he knows Prabhupada's books." And it was the first time I had been with Pushtakrishna. But he was describing Vaisheshika Prabhu like that to me. And here I was sitting in front of him and he was saying, "I live to be corrected." And I was thinking, he knows the books much better than I. Who am I to correct? But still, he took the position, the humble position. "I live to be corrected." So here he's saying that, what is the lesson? What is the lesson? What is the lesson? That's the right question to ask. No matter how things are changing in your life, it will give you a higher perspective immediately. That was his realization. Another one. The whole material nature is always being destroyed and it's always changing. So rather than getting attached and trying to hold on, just observe that it's changing and think, isn't this interesting? Within the lifetime of any living entity, there's going to be some changes. And our lifetime, according to Brahma, is over in a couple of minutes. So it's not that significant. Another one. So whatever's happening is happening for a reason. In one sense, nobody's actually dying. We're only moving from one circumstance to another. So from a much higher perspective, we can see that this is just the churning of the material nature, and we need not become overly upset about it. And the last one, this too shall pass. Everything blows through. And looking back on it, everyone's going to see that this was a very pivotal time in history when, at least for the people who took advantage of it, we were able to get a new lease on life. All right. So these are some realizations which were shared and I've passed on. And I tried to sit back and let a few others do some of the work. And now we can take up our japa. You have something? Oh, Now we can take up a japa and we'll begin chanting together. It's already dead? Huh? Okay. Yeah, you could probably do that. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sri Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hari Hari, Hari Rama, Hari Rama, Rama Rama, Hari Hari, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hari Hari, Hari Rama, Hari Rama, Rama Rama, Hari Hari, Hare Krishna, Shiva Sri Gaura Bhaktivinoda. So we will end here. And tomorrow, I believe, is Nishinga Chaturdasi. And is it? I think it's everywhere tomorrow. In America also. And Europe, India. Anyways, for those who I won't see tomorrow, please have a nice Nishinga Chaturdasi. And I'm sure there'll be online festivals going on in many places. And I know they're going on everywhere. So many places. There'll be a local festival, I'm sure. And there'll be a global festival. And there'll be a regional festival. And there'll be so many festivals. A universal festival. Possibly. Anyways. So, Dara, would you like to share anything? As long as I see you right now.
Jai Hari Bol Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
So Gaura Prabhu is here.
Gaura Prabhu?
Canada, yes. And he's saying that Jayananda Prabhu's disappearance day today.
Uh-huh.
But he's reminding us that we honor Jayananda Prabhu.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow. That's so, going to take time. Do you have any Jayananda stories?
Not personally myself, no, but maybe Gaura does.
Huh? Is Gaura online?
Yeah, he's with you. He's here.
Oh, really? Gaura. Yeah,
unmute yourself, Gaura.
Oh, that's auspicious. Another godbrother.
Yeah.
Is Yarubar here too?
Yarubar is here.
Yarubar, do you have any stories of Jayananda?
I can read one. Let me find it.
I have a story. I remember Jayananda. It's 1976, Rathi Yatra. Oh, there's Gaura. Gaura, we'll take you first. Hari Bol, my humble obeisances, Gaura Prabhu. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Hari Bol.
So nice to have your Sangha.
No, it's all because of Dira Prabhu. He got me here.
Uh-huh. Wow. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for doing this, Maharaj. I really, I feel connected to you and I feel more connected to Srila Prabhupada in your presence and that of Dira Prabhu and so many other of your students that you inspire.
Would you like to share a story about Jayananda?
Oh, the first time I ever heard about Jayananda was through Kalakanta Prabhu. Just after he departed, Kalakanta wrote a very nice article. And just one thing that stands out, a couple of things that stand out for me is Jayananda was under one of the temple cars and he was repairing it. And he was preaching to whoever it was that was with him. And he said, you know, so many people may come to our ISKCON and so many people may depart temporarily. But he said that we just have to go on chanting the holy names, regardless of what happens. And I was personally inspired by Jayananda Prabhu when I heard about these boga runs that he used to do. where he would get so much boga donated for Rath Yatras. So I used to go to the Toronto food terminal where all the huge vegetable and fruit companies were located. I'd go there at 4 o'clock in the morning and I tell them I'm with the Hare Krishna Temple. We feed 400 people every Sunday at the Toronto Temple. And if at the end of the day, if you have any fruits or vegetables that, you know, may not be the best quality, we could certainly use them. And I used to get such a van load packed with free vegetables and that Bhakti Mark Swami he'd start getting angry at me after a while. Gora, that's enough. Stop, stop. So that was all from Jayananda Prabhu's
inspiration.
Yeah, I'd come back and I'd have to like search for someone. Anyone I'd see, I'd nab them and I'd put them on vegetable cut-up duty because there was so much to process. So yeah, Jayananda sounds amazing. He just inspired everybody he was with. So
I have one story. Yeah. I have one story I'll share. And I've told this story. It's not something that I personally witnessed. I heard it from Raghunuga. I don't know if you know Raghunuga. He departed a couple of years ago. He had been an associate. He was from the Boston Temple, actually. I knew him from back in the 70s. And he and his brother both took initiation and from Prabhupada. And he went with us to the 76 Rath Yatra when Jayananda was doing all the work. And Raghunuga told me this story many, many years ago. And he was out of the Association of Devotees for some time. But actually, towards the end, before he departed, a couple of years, he started coming back around the Boston Temple very frequently, constantly. And he was just so, the devotees were so inspired. I'm speaking about Raghunuga right now. Were so inspired with him. And that when he all of a sudden got this aneurysm, it put the devotees, it shocked. And he departed shortly afterwards. Devotees were devastated. They loved him. They loved him. But he told me this story about Jayananda way back many years ago. And when devotees hear this story, sometimes they cringe. But he told it to me, and he said, it's a fact, Maharaj. He did it. I was right there. I was with him because he was helping Jayananda working on the carts in 1976. He went down before us, and somehow, I can't remember how it was that he was there. And Jayananda was very frantically trying to get the carts finished, you know, because Prabhupada, as you know, Prabhupada took part in that Rath Yatra festival in New York. And Prabhupada sat on the very cart that they were working on. He didn't know that at the time. Raghunuga didn't know that at the time, but Prabhupada was to sit on that cart. And there was a lot of work that had to get done. And somebody came to the site where they were building the carts, and they told the devotees, Prabhus, we couldn't bring any prasadam for you. And but there's some, if you all go back to the temple, there's some mahaprasadam available that they're saving for all the devotees who are building the carts. And Jayananda, when he saw that he was potentially going to lose some workers, and he was on such a, for him, it was like 24/7, he was working to get those carts completed. So he was working on the axle of the cart, and he took his finger, and he took the axle grease. He said, Prabhus, and he licked the axle grease. He said,
oh,
this is our Mahaprasadam.
Oh, yeah. Raghunuga said he was shocked.
I have a short antidote, Maharaj. Jayananda used to, in San Francisco Temple, he used to take out the trash. And he would be chanting while he would do all this. He would be always be in the background, either cleaning or, you know, he would do be the last person washing the pots. Like somebody else we know, Maharaj, I remember you always were the last person after the Sunday feast, washing the pots in the kitchen. But anyways, somebody was in the back alley behind the temple, and they saw Jayananda was so blissful, taking out the trash and chanting Hare Krishna, that they thought, if this is the guy that takes out their trash, I want what he's got, and joined the temple right then and there.
Right.
And that was the nature of Jayananda. He was just always absorbed in the most menial types of service with absolute ecstasy and bliss, just because he loved Prabhupada so much. Prabhupada, when he came in the room, Prabhupada said he looks just like Lord Chaitanya with saffron dhoti. Prabhupada was always very pleased. Jayananda was always very shy around Prabhupada, but Prabhupada would bring him forward. Jayananda, come closer, and give him responsibility. He wasn't the whacked out hippie that most of us were when we joined. He was an engineer, had a responsible job, and he would give all the money to Srila Prabhupada. He also inherited a lot of money, gave Prabhupada thousands of dollars. I can't remember the exact figure. I think at the time it was like $5,000, which today, in today's money, would be $50,000 to publish.
It's a printed book, wasn't it?
Yeah. So, there's Dayananda gave a long story. I don't think we have time now, Maharaj, though. But on the disciples group on Facebook, Dayananda gave tons of nectar about Jayananda.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you want to hear it.
I remember in the book, they told one story how he was known by the rough guys as Johnny Ananda.
Yeah. He would recruit a service from, you know, bars, restaurants, didn't matter. He would engage everybody somehow or other. He was just so blissful. Nobody could turn him away. Nobody could say no to him. So he would get the boga for free. It was amazing. He was just an amazing personality. Empowered, for sure.
Thank you. So I'm going to have to go because I have my walk before it gets too dark. And Goro, anything else you'd like to share before we go?
Maharaj. Murali Krishna was saying, because he was serving with Jayananda, and he said they got to the temple and there wasn't any soap, and then Jayananda saw a can of Comet. and he said, hey, this works really good. It takes all the grease off. And Murali's point was that Jayananda never complained about anything. Whatever Krishna provided, that was what he utilized.
Yeah, nice.
Thank you for reminding me and all of us of the auspicious day. Jayananda, we used to always read. I remember we also read on Jayananda's because Kalakanta had written a lot about him. And I think Trey had a lot of his association in San Francisco also. I should have got him online today. He actually, in fact, now that I think about it, he asked me for the link about a week ago and I forgot to send it to him for the Zoom conference. Anyways, but we got something about Jayananda. So thank you. So we'll end in our traditional way. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.